The weekend is near and the next round of footy is finally upon us. And your ultimate guide to all the upcoming action lies within the Fox Footy Podcast Bunker. Welcome to Match Committee.
Welcome to Grand Final Week, a time where heroes are made, villains are formed, and superstar free agents create bombshells. This was a week where Geelong fans were supposed to lap up their club's first Grand Final appearance in 9 years and a possible fairy tale finish for Gaz. And that's still the case. But Jeremy Cameron's stunning call to leave the Giants has momentarily hijacked the news cycle and has Cats fans pondering the possibilities of 2021. We'll discuss Gazza, Jezza, and Moz's press conference gaffe on the Grand Final edition of the Fox Footy Podcast. Ben Waterworth with you, as is foxfooty.com.au's chief Brownlow tracker correspondent, Max Lawton. Hello, Maxie.
Hello, Benny. Yes, typing madly, getting those votes into the tracker from my couch. It was an exciting night. I was dressed by Kmart, excellent, but it went well.
And you did a great job, Maxie, and you can check out all the votes, every single vote at foxfooty.com.au. And live from Olsen Avenue on the Gold Coast, the home of the Southport Sharks, is chief on the couch, under the bus thrower, Tom Moss.
Hello, Ben. Hello, Max. Yes, I'm here at Geelong Open Training. There's a few Cat supporters just filtering in. They all have to sign in, you know, in the COVID safe, what do you call it, barcode, I guess.
So you can be tracked.
Come in, so you can be tracked. And there's a fair line out the front for people trying to get in. But I'm watching Jack Stephen have a run around. I'm watching a few of the guys who weren't in the seniors on the weekend have a bit of a kick. And I assume the main team will be out soon. But it is good to be here with you both. And I think it's the first time we've done a podcast where I've been on site.
So on location.
If something happens, I can give you live updates, even though people who will be listening to this won't be getting it live. It doesn't really matter.
We like it live. So before we go any further, always a very highly anticipated segment on Couch every week is the good, the bad, and the ugly on segment three. And Tommy featured quite prominently, has to be said, last night.
Not in the good.
Not in the good. Not in the bad either. A very good discussion it was on Saturday night about the battle between Gary Ablett and Daniel Rich and which team got the better of that matchup, particularly Rich being great offensively, but Gary Ablett, you know, half of his disposals essentially led to Cat scores. And that discussion was then conveyed to Chris Scott in the press conference after the game, which the boys weren't too happy about, it sounds like.
Well, if you're not going to be the good, you prefer to be the bad. And if you're not going to be the bad, well, there's only one left, and it's the ugly. No, it was the ugly. And I didn't see it coming. to give you some background,
The
head honchos at Fox Footy, they really like it because the press conference is obviously, Tom Brown sits at the front of the press conference with his Channel 7 microphone. And they like it if I can somehow relay a question, if it's relevant, related to what the Fox Footy guys have been saying, either at halftime or after the game, just to keep Fox Footy relevant in people's minds. I think it's not a big thing, but it, you know, if there's something there, then I can say, you know, these guys are saying on Fox Footy. Yep. So the Daniel Rich and Gary Ablett discussion was quite a heated one after the game, and in the press box, I was watching it, and I got to say, I was probably only half watching it as I was sort of finishing off the copy, Max, that I was filing to you. But I was watching it enough to know to think I knew what was being said. Obviously not, because I went to the press conference and I said one of the questions to Chris Scott, my only question to Chris Scott, was around the matchup. And I said, you know, the few of the guys on Fox Footy were debating it. And you should always be, number one lesson at a press conference, you should always be prepared for a question to come back at you before an answer is returned. So he said, well, what were they saying? And I've got to say, I absolutely panicked. I thought I knew that Gary Lyon was saying one thing and Jonathan Brown was saying the other thing. In fact, they were all saying the same thing, pretty much. Although I found out in hindsight that Lyon and Brown were saying that Geelong did the wrong thing. Yeah. And Nick Riewoldt wasn't saying Geelong did the... Sorry, I'll start again. Lyon and Brown were saying that Brisbane did the wrong thing by allowing Daniel Rich to continue on Gary Ablett, whereas Riewoldt wasn't saying anything about Brisbane. He was just saying, no, don't worry about Brisbane. This is Geelong doing really well to have the matchup. So effectively, they were saying a similar thing. But I just got it badly wrong. And as soon as I got it wrong, I got a text from Gary Lyon. I got a text from Jonathan Brown and a text from Nick Riewoldt and a text from the producer. Clearly all sitting near each other, around each other, abusing me. I thought, oh no, this is gonna be bad. And it was and it was pretty awkward. Luckily, they took the piss out of me, and it was all fine. But then on the couch last night, I was the ugly, and it was
back over it.
Yeah, well, it wasn't ideal. I got a few text messages this morning, but it was all fine. It was all good fun. As you guys know, I've got relatively thick skin, so play on, as they say.
Yeah. It was an interesting discussion around the idea of who is to blame for a matchup. Does the team that's defending create the matchup, or does the team that's attacking create the matchup? There's a lot of lot of differences in opinion there, and Tom simplified it and got it wrong. So
That's right. Well, Nick Riewoldt was saying that the proper matchups actually don't really happen much anymore, and it's more. It's more that Geelong did really well to continue to have Gary Ablett around Daniel Rich, whereas the others were saying, no, it was more that Brisbane did poorly to have Rich on Ablett. That's probably the best way to describe it.
Yeah.
I made it an issue when it probably wasn't, but it was a good discussion. I'm sorry that I butchered it.
No,
as Gary Rowan comes on the field and has a kick of the footy.
It gave us ample entertainment in the aftermath, Tom, so no need to apologise. So I think, Maxie, we've got the grand final that, in general, pre-finals, most predicted, a Richmond-Geelong grand final, although it's come about not via the conventional route as many expected.
Yes. I said that these were the best two teams coming into the finals. A lot of people said that, and here we are. It's just that they had to go and be away preliminary finalists. But in a way, it's sort of worked out because, certainly for Geelong, their whole thing going in was they're much better at the Gabba, and if they had finals-wise gone as expected, Geelong wouldn't have played Brisbane at the Gabba. They would have played them at Metricon, you'd expect, to avoid the home ground advantage for the away team Brisbane. So Geelong, now the only unbeaten team at the Gabba this year, winning on average by about 50 points. And they've beaten three top six teams in the process. So that's not all easy beats that they've beaten. So they play well at that ground. And then Richmond, as everyone sort of flagged after their loss to Brisbane, they're doing the thing that teams do, the Hawthorn 2015 thing, the thing where you, at the end of a dynasty, you need a bit of difficulty to get you excited, to get you interested again. And it worked out for them on that pathway. And these are the best two teams. It doesn't say that Port and Brisbane weren't very good teams and couldn't have made the grand final. These games were quite close. The Brisbane one less so, but as a Geelong fan, it felt very close.
Hey, Max, is it dynasty or dynasty?
It's whichever one I feel like saying at the time. I think the Queen's English would say it's dynasty.
No worries. All right. Yeah, sorry, Benny.
No, I was going to ask, what is it like being in Queensland covering two Victorian teams ahead of an all-Victorian grand final at the Gabba?
It's weird. Very weird.
Quiet?
Logistically, I know it's not about me, but it is great for those of us who are living on the Gold Coast, which is all the Melbourne media pretty much, because Geelong is staying at Southport, which is about 20 minutes away from where I am in Broadbeach. And the Richmond Football Club is right near Metricon Stadium, about 10 minutes away. So in terms of being able to get to trainings and follow the stories of the week, it's perfect. The Cats and Richmond, I think, are very similar in that they're hardened, seasoned finals teams. Now, we know Geelong haven't won a flag since 2011, but they've been around the mark. They played a lot of finals in that time. And we know Richmond have won two of the last three. And you can just tell, I was at Richmond's open media session yesterday, and Geelong today so far, they're just very relaxed and both teams are very confident. Now, I'm trying to think back, and you guys might be able to help me. I'm trying to think back to previous grand finals. Did you ever go into a grand final thinking, oh, I'm not sure this team's actually that confident or this team needs a big upset? Because I feel like both teams expect to win, which makes for a really entertaining game this Saturday night.
Last year, it certainly felt like GWS were big underdogs, not just because of the close games to get there, but the fact that Richmond had been so dominant and GWS hadn't. Yeah. That's the one that comes to mind that was a real upset. I'm not sure if you had any in mind, Benny.
What about Ben? Someone said this to me yesterday. I'm not sure if I actually agree or not, but that if Richmond win this flag, it will be their best premiership of the three, better than beating Adelaide in 2017, better than beating GWS last year. Do you agree with that, Ben?
Yeah, I do, because when you consider all the criticism that Richmond have had in previous years, that they are only able to capture flags because of this MCG dominance in the grand finals at the MCG. They've had a shocking record at the MCG this year. They've barely played there and they haven't won there. And considering all the off-field distractions that they've had, not that it's necessarily an excuse because what's happened off the field's been pretty ordinary, but This is a very, very different flag to the other three in so many different ways. And while they might not have as much respect as maybe what they previously had, you've got to respect them before the grand final on Saturday. You've got to respect them actually getting there against all the odds and how they've been able to really unite in very difficult circumstances.
Tom, are you heading outside to have an audition on the Oval for the Geelong team this week?
Is that what you're saying? No, I'm not. I just walked outside just to see if the wind was down, which it's not, so I'm back in the car now. I'm giving you running commentary, but you've got Gary Ablett walking around with a soccer ball now, which is interesting, next to Sava Radigalea, who we're going to talk about a bit later on. It's a very light session, of course. It's only a couple of days since their last game. Now, Jack Stevens running some laps, not moving overly freely, but he's obviously covering some case. I can't see Jack Stevens playing. Even if he was fit, he'd be on the cusp, but I don't think they'd take the risk.
No, I wouldn't have thought so. The grand final that this actually reminds me of, weirdly enough, given the teams that just lost, is 2004.
Yep.
Where you've got the team that's won all these flags and has been the best team for so long, and then you had Port Adelaide in that year, who had been around the mark, had been one of the two best teams for 2-3 years, but just couldn't get there. This very much feels like Geelong finally getting to the grand final they've, in a sense, deserved to get to by their home and away dominance. And it's just whether they can actually be the best team on the day. And I think most people seem to agree that Geelong at their best this year is the best team in the comp.
Just before we get some trade whispers, Maxi, is this another piece of evidence that's slowly banking up following losses to Port Adelaide and Brisbane in the preliminary finals to scrap the pre-finals bye? I think it was inevitable that this was sort of going to come to the fore of discussions and panel shows in the aftermath. And Chris Fagan was asked about it and said maybe we should get a scientist in to try and answer that question during his press conference. But is this just adding to the weight now that the AFL might have to look at this situation?
It's so tough to say because my immediate gut reaction is always small sample size. Yep. Because we've had 10 games since the pre-finals bye was introduced where the preliminary finalist, the host, had played two games in a month, basically. And we got a question in the mailbag about this from Ben Pera, who actually, I'll cite that now because he wanted to know, when do we know if it's a thing? And it's almost impossible to tell because you're never going to get a good sample size because you're getting two games a year. But the thing you got to remember, particularly with Brisbane played on September 19th in round 18. Then they played on the 2nd of October, beating Richmond, and they didn't play again until October 17. So in a season where you haven't played that much footy anyway, you're playing shorter games of footy as well, they had suddenly one game in the space of about 4 weeks. So you could understand why they wouldn't have been at their absolute best. And it was very clear for much of that game on Saturday night that Brisbane was not playing at its best. They looked tired at times, certainly in the second half. So it makes sense to draw a connection between the two, but it's so hard to. The statistically minded part of my brain says, no, you can't draw a connection, but you can understand why everyone would.
Yeah.
It makes to me that the pre-finals bye it has done its dash. I don't think we need the pre-finals bye anymore. I get why they brought it in, Ross Lyon and was it North Melbourne as well that rested some players?
I thought it was stupid at the time, to be fair.
You can first week of finals. That's great, but I just think for the sake of another week of the season, like they've already got a bye in the mid-season, just keep everyone playing. I think the status quo is to keep the teams playing, and to change it, you need a really good reason. I'm not sure we ever had a really good reason. And now they have an opportunity to change it back next year, and I think that's what they should do.
This was supposed to be a week for Geelong fans, and it still will be, about looking forward to this grand final and breaking the 9-year grand final drought that they had compared to some other teams that have waited a lot longer to be in the grand final. But at the start of the week has been and will continue to be about Jeremy Cameron's sensational decision to walk out or say to the Giants that he wants out. He wants to exercise his free agency rights. And while the Giants didn't confirm it in their press release, essentially Dave Matthews in a radio interview, then Chris Scott on AFL 360 last night, said that Geelong is Cameron's preferred destination for 2021. And Maxi, it's very hard, I think, certainly in the next couple of days for Cats fans to not think about 2021 as well as Saturday's big game.
yeah, it feels bad talking about this in grand final week, but the fact is it's moves like this are such big news. Like, we know the grand final's happening. We can only write so much previewing the game. And also, we look at the numbers of our stories and people care about trade stuff quite a bit more than pure game preview stuff. So that's why we're talking about it for a start. For the Geelong forward line, it's almost perfect in a way. If you think about it, he's going to partner with Tom Hawkins. You're going to have a team combining the two reigning Coleman medalists for the first time since 1902. So that's reasonably strong.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. And then it also works well because once Tom Hawkins does retire, I think he's going to be 32 going into next year, Dangerfield can be basically a permanent forward. And then you've got those two as your two biggest targets. So it sets Geelong up so well. It's one of these things where everyone complains about free agency, and we can get into that as well. But it's a perfect situation for Geelong, who are the fortunate recipients of their location. They just happen to be in the perfect spot to be the biggest beneficiaries of the go-home factor, where players from the country want to go back there.
Tommy, I was going to say that the narrative, and I've heard you say multiple times over the past couple of weeks that your sense was that Cameron would still re-sign with the Giants, despite the interest from Geelong and potentially other clubs as well. This really seemed to shock the footy industry on Monday night when this was announced, particularly after the fantastic paparazzi snaps of Cameron meeting with Dave Matthews and Stevie Johnson and James Warburton.
Rockpool.
And at a couple of, at a fancy Sydney restaurant recently, and he's still chosen the Cats.
Yeah, it was jarring when this news dropped yesterday, when the Giants released their media release and put it on social media. I said to Kath Lockman on AFL Tonight last week, she asked me, what do I think is going to happen? I said, look, I really don't know, but you get a sense when players are going to leave, like Zach Williams and people from the club stop telling you that they're confident and they're just hopeful. People up until a couple of days ago were still very confident that Cameron was going to stay. And as a result, I was leaning more towards that way. I mean, they thought that he was more than likely going to re-sign with them, if only for 2 years, to take him to unrestricted free agency status. So when this dropped yesterday afternoon, it was a shock. It wasn't a shock to me that Geelong is his preferred destination. I know that there's been reports about Collingwood, but I always said that he didn't want to live in Melbourne and didn't want to live in a footy bubble in Melbourne. And Jason McCartney confirmed it on radio this morning that he, on SEN, that Jeremy Cameron categorically hated the hub. He really didn't like that because he's not a footy head. You know, there's some AFL players that love the game. Lockie Neal's one of them. He watches 6 or 7 or 8 games a weekend. His dad's an encyclopedia. You know, Lockie Neal has footy running through his veins. Jeremy Cameron's very good at it, but he's not going to be a coach or an assistant coach after he finishes playing. He'll do other things. He's not necessarily a footy head. And I think all footy people know the difference between the two. So for him to go to Geelong is a way of saying, look, it's not really about money. The Geelong offer was somewhere between $50,000 and $100,000 a year more than the Giants, but it was also about $100,000 or maybe even a bit more less than Collingwood. It's about being in Victoria near family. His girlfriend wanted to come back to Victoria, and it's also about him going to a club which he thinks can challenge. And the reality is Geelong have played finals every year aside from one since, I don't know, Max, what, 2007? So they're clearly a successful club, and they sold the dream to him, and they've won. The next stage, Ben, is getting a deal done, which will be a lot harder than it ever has been, I think, for any other restricted free agent.
Yeah, it sounds like there could be an AFL first here. So officially, there has never been a matched bid that has then led to a forced trade for a restricted free agent. Everyone talks about Patrick Dangerfield from Adelaide to Geelong, but essentially that was just a trade that was struck rather than Dangerfield moving officially via free agency. But Dave Matthews on 3W Sports Day on Monday night essentially confirmed that they are going to be matching the offer. And what that offer is going to be fascinating because we know that Geelong don't overpay their players. They've got a wonderful culture of players being prepared to play for probably not as much as what they're really, from a market value perspective, what they're truly worth. So what this offer is and what that might lead to is absolutely fascinating. And there's clearly the Giants see this very juicy draft hand that Geelong holds, which is currently 3 first-round picks, albeit middle to late first-round picks. They see that and think, we want a piece of that. We want to be compensated well for losing the 2019 Coleman medalist.
I think that's the obvious answer for the Giants. But my understanding is they're more focused on players than draft picks. They're going to get a first-round draft pick for Zach Williams. And they will ask for no more than one other first-round draft pick from Geelong. So they might want 11. I presume they'll ask for 11. It might be 13, might be 18, or whatever the draft picks end up being. But they're not trying to get Zach Williams as a compensation for a first-round pick plus two or three others. They don't want three or four first-round draft picks, because then that cycle that we've spoken about a few weeks ago just starts again. They want some players. And you've got to look at players like Jordan Clark, who's restless, wants to play, even though he's contracted, to Asava Radigalia, who's contracted, Brandon Parford, who the Cats fans would hate to lose. But the Cats will have to end up giving up something to get Jeremy Cameron, and the Giants will be asking for plenty. And don't assume it's just going to be draft picks. I think draft picks will be the least of it.
What does this mean for the Giants? Sorry, Maxie, what does it? What does this mean from their perspective? It's on the discussion on the panel shows last night was this is essentially confirms that the Giants premiership window has closed for the time being when you lose a player of Cameron's quality. Where does it all sit now for the Giants?
It's obviously not ideal. What is he led there goal kicking 9 times? It's not a player you want to be losing. It's not an impossible hole to fill just based on pure personnel. Now, they don't have a player of the caliber of Cameron, and the fact that he hated the hub does go some way to explaining his drop in form. But the fact that, you know, that game against Adelaide comes to mind this year, they were playing him on a wing, and you had Himmelberg and other key forwards, I forget their names.
Riccardi Finlayson.
Yeah, Riccardi's really coming into the frame this last year. You've got guys who can play there. Now, you might have wanted to swim one of them back in next year as well. I think Himmelberg was mentioned as a potential defender for next year. But still, they have a lot of tools, so it's not an impossible hole to fill, but they don't have a player of his caliber. So it's, as always, about the Giants are going to lose players. It's the natural way of things that you can only afford so many very, very good players. And particularly when you're a place like GWS, you find it harder to retain players. And Dave Matthews said as much. And a lot of the arguments around keeping Kola and things that allow the Giants to have a bit extra in the cap so that they can pay for extra rent and things that cost more in Sydney is the fact that it's harder for them to retain players. And if you're looking for a completely fair competition for all 18 clubs, that's correct. But this is the nature of free agency, and I like the nature of free agency because the point is to empower the players. We're not a situation like America where you can just trade players freely because they're not on millions and millions of dollars and easily able to move. If you're freely trading players who are on 200, 300 grand and you're suddenly having to find a new place in Sydney, you know, you can afford it, but it's not the easiest thing in the world. And we're not in that space as a sport yet. So
I agree. Yeah. The market's not big enough.
No, and the player base isn't big enough. So it just doesn't work that way. So these are the things that happen when you have a free agency system. We can't force the best players to always go to the bad teams. That's what the draft does. The draft is already an anti-player tool. The draft assists clubs. What needs to be tweaked is the way the draft works so that you get a longer contract than 2 years when you start. That's the biggest problem I have with the system right now. Because
for all picks, Max, or just the top 20 or 30?
I haven't thought too deeply. I'd be happy doing all picks, at least 3, and maybe like an option for 4 for the top end players, because you need to have some security that you're getting players in. Jai Caldwell, who's right now making a decision today, he could have decided to leave by the time you're listening to this podcast, listeners. You know, he's been there for 2 years, basically. That's not enough time to get integrated into the system and to know if you are going to be a midfielder of the future that this club wants to commit millions and millions of dollars to. So the problem is he's already getting offers that are that big to lure him away, and then the cycle is enforced by that. So it's that sort of problem that needs to be solved before free agency. Free agency works. I don't know if you disagree, Tom, or where you think it sits.
No, I think I like free agency. I can see why it frustrates clubs. But, you know, like, on the other hand, you've got Collingwood trying to push out Adam Treloar with 5 years remaining on a deal. So it's not like clubs are completely powerless to change their list and do the right thing. The issue with free agency is I think it's benefiting clubs where we didn't think it would. and it's making stronger clubs stronger. But then the argument against that is, well, you've got the Western Bulldogs who won a flag in 2016 and got Tom Boyd under contract. I know it's not a free agent. And then the Brisbane Lions, who have challenged this year and made the top four last year, got Lachie Neale under contract. So if you are a good enough club, you can still attract players of a high quality from other clubs. It's just you're probably more likely to attract players if you are a consistently top club.
Well, it's going to be fascinating to see where this all pans out, and particularly from a Geelong perspective, who they prioritise now. I think they clearly want to prioritise Jeremy Cameron. It's I think Rob Harding, the Gun Footy analyst, said on SEN yesterday that it's from a timing perspective, it's perfect to bring in someone like a Cameron, considering age and Tom Hawkins' stage in his career and Patrick Dangerfield's stage in his career. It now sort of... If they should be able to land Jeremy Cameron still. Now, I think they'll be prepared to move some mountains to make it work. But what happens now with the likes of Brad Crouch, Sean Higgins, and Tom, as you reported last week, Isaac Smith in particular, who does Geelong prioritise there? I get the sense that the pursuit of Brad Crouch will probably die down now. But considering that Sean Higgins is really keen to come home and North Melbourne sound like they're prepared to make that work, and Isaac Smith's an unrestricted free agent, so won't cost the Cats anything in that sense. Maybe the Crouch play might wane, I suppose, Tommy. Is that how you see it?
Well, I don't know. They still want another midfielder. So if it's not Crouch, maybe they'll be going after someone else.
Right.
Yeah, I mean, Crouch really is... I mean, Adelaide can technically match the bid, just like the Giants are almost certain to do. But I think Crouch is more likely to be able to get there on a... as a restricted free agent, and it's just about whether they can fit him in the salary cap. And clearly they thought about this, but they definitely want another midfielder. So if it's not Crouch, it'll be someone else. And Crouch is the obvious one that's still available.
That's the silly part of the system, where Adelaide is happy for Brad Crouch to walk, because if they get a first-round compensation pick, it's pick two. Jeremy Cameron walks, the Giants get pick 10.
Yeah, Hawthorn got pick 19 for Buddy, didn't they?
Yes, and yeah. James Frawley, that situation being all funny as well. So
yeah. Yeah, it is. It's not perfect, but there's so much in footy that isn't perfect. The shape of the ball isn't perfect. You know what I'm saying? So,
this is easier to change.
No, but football is football. The industry, the sport, it's naturally got some quirks and some chinks. And yes, it's good to get rid of as many as possible. And they've done that with some of the rules in the game and the goal line technology and things like that. But what we've seen is that when you change things, there's still other issues at play, and it's never going to be absolutely perfect. But I think the AFL has done a reasonable job in creating a fairer system as much as possible. Like this time last year, the Suns were a basket case. They were the laughing stock. 12 months on, they've got some hope. So you can change things pretty quickly. North Melbourne have got a really difficult run ahead. But who's to say that in 2 years' time, they can't be the same as what the Suns are now, you know, winning five, six, seven games and having some hope. But it's hard to predict the future when that you just don't have talent on a list. And I don't know, Gil McLaughlin's number one or one of his top priorities is to have footy fans going to a game thinking any team can win. And I think by and large in the home and away season, most teams think they're a chance for most games. And that's more than what other sporting leagues can say around the world.
You mentioned the Suns just then, Tommy. You've been following the Adam Treloar story quite closely over the past 7 days, really, and the public stance from both Treloar and his management seem to be very, very different to what's going on behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, I mean, Collingwood's trying to push him out, and
they're trying to push him out.
Yeah, they're absolutely trying to push him out. I mean, we wrote that last week. And the silence ever since has been deafening from Collingwood Football Club. Treloar is aware of it. Collingwood know that they can't actually push him out unless Treloar agrees. Mm. So it's sort of pointless saying we want you to leave unless they think there's a chance that he could go. I think ideally they'd like him to go to the Gold Coast Suns and get pick 5 in return. But I'm not sure that I know that he's not keen to go to Queensland. He's not keen to go anywhere. He wants to stay at Collingwood, but he also doesn't want to stay at a club which doesn't want him. So it's that constant battle. It's like Jack Watts was told at Melbourne, we think you should go. And he said, oh, geez, well, I don't want to go. But then you think about it, you sleep on it for a few nights and you realise, do I really want to be at a club where they don't really want me? And then you sort of make the call and you take the plunge. So It's going to be interesting to see what Victorian clubs, if any, are interested in Adam Treloar, because he's a good player, but he's not a superstar, and he's not exactly beautifully skilled or overly durable, and he's 27, so it's not like he's got a long time ahead of being a frontline midfielder, you'd think, given his history with soft tissue complaints. But Collingwood's trying to free up some salary cap space, and they're trying to do it as quickly as possible. And if they can trade Treloar, that creates a big hole in their salary cap where they can then get aggressive and go after others, because they feel as if they need an agile forward. We reported a while ago that they're interested in Jack Gunston. He's exactly what they're after. They were clearly in for Jeremy Cameron. You can see the sort of forward they're in for. Unfortunately for Collingwood, there's not too many others on the market in the AFL.
Is part of the situation as well to do with the backloading of Treloar's contract, and that they've essentially gotten the cheaper years of his deal out of the way and are given an incentive to get rid of him now before and make someone else pay the heavy part of it?
Yeah, and that's what I know is frustrated Treloar, that he's taken a pay cut by pushing some money back, as the clubs often ask players to do when they're in the window so that they can fit all the players they want in. And he agreed to do that. So 2020 has seen him have a pay cut due to COVID, which is understandable, just like every other player. About 35% of their wage has been cut for the year. And 2021, he was due to spike. Look, I'm told up to about $900,000. It might be $850,000. Either way, it's the biggest contracted year that he would have had. Now, it's hard to argue that he wouldn't be worth that figure for a solitary year. But over the course of his contract, he's probably been underpaid. So it sort of all evens out. And I think now that Collingwood feel like they're going to pay him a lot of money in a year where potentially he's not going to be worth that sort of salary, he's an easy target to trade. And it's frustrated him. And it's annoyed him that the Pies, who he's been very loyal to and likes a lot and has teammates who he's very close with, Jeremy Howe, can do this to him. But this is the business we're in. So then the next stage is for Collingwood to come out and say, we're open to trading, or to come out and say, actually, no, we're not. But I'd be shocked if they said we weren't, because I'm very reliably told that they want him to move on via trade, and they want to get a good draft pick and free up some salary cap space in doing so.
Well, it's going to be a very interesting storyline to follow in the next couple of weeks.
One thing, Benny. On his manager, Tim Hazel, who is a pretty experienced footy manager, it's understandable that his manager came out and said he wants to stay, because his client is saying, I want to stay at the club. So his manager goes, he's not going anywhere. That's completely fair enough.
Yeah.
But no one yet has been able to say that Collingwood wants to keep Adam Treloar. Even when Eddie Maguire was on Footy Classified, he couldn't say that Collingwood wants to keep Adam Treloar. All they're saying is that he's contracted and that he wants to stay. And this is why the nuance is so important in these stories, because people don't understand that just because he's contracted, it's actually a waste of words. There's players that are moving on contracted all the time. It makes it harder to do a trade, but it doesn't make it impossible at all. And that's the balance that's needed with these types of narratives. Collingwood's being very aggressive. They're not going to wait any longer. And in one sense, that I respect that. And in the other sense, I feel sorry for Treloar, because he's done the right thing by the club. He's got another 5 years on a contract.
Well, you can keep your eyes peeled on foxfooty.com.au for all the latest news around Adam Treloar and all the latest trade whispers as well, which is up today. But now on the Fox Footy podcast, it is time for Australia's favourite segment, live from Southport, Fair or Fast.
Live from Southport. Here we go.
Live from the car park, like WrestleMania 9.
As Mitch Duncan hits Joel Selwood on the chest. And
Gary Ablett, hits Joel Selwood.
Yeah, very accurate kick. And Gary Ablett, I'll just give you a bit of an update what's going on here. Gary Ablett's wearing an orange vest because he's one of the defenders alongside Radigalia. As Gary Rowan turns inside out, gives off a handball. Paddy Dangerfield's running around in another group. And Jack Stevens finished running laps.
That's your best Ben Waterworth commentary impression.
That is it. No, Ben Waterworth, I can't do Ben Waterworth. He's one of the best we've got, especially when it comes to cork in the ocean type moments. I love it when players kick goals and Benny Waterworth is commentating. Anyway, fair or fast. Now, this is a preview edition of fair or fast, like last week. So two Richmond questions, two Geelong questions.
Oh, is there a football game this weekend we're talking about?
There's a footy game, yeah. Saturday night at the Gabba. So we'll start with Richmond. I'll go Richmond 1, Richmond 2. So I'll go to you first, Ben. Fair or fast? If Richmond wins, it is officially a dynasty.
Yes, fair, totally fair, because I think I go dynasty. I think it's fair because footy code for a dynasty is, and I think Maxie agrees with this, is three premierships in 4 years. Mm-hmm. So we talk about dynasties. You know, it's funny, like, is the Geelong dynasty, does Geelong have a dynasty from 2007 to 2011? Because that was three flags in 5 years, not 4 years. That gap and that 2008 grand final is one that sort of still haunts. You know, you speak to Cameron Mooney about the 2008 grand final, and that emotion of losing that game is probably stronger than winning the other two flags and missing out the 2011 flag for him. But if Richmond wins this, it's undoubtedly a dynasty. And I think Nick Riewoldt talks about it a lot. Their best season was 2018, and they just had one bad night against Collingwood in that
one bad half. Really?
Yeah, that first half was shocking, and it's cost them from, you know, certainly a chance at winning three in a row and potentially four in a row. Hindsight's beautiful. The Tigers will be focused on Saturday night, and if they win, it's definitely a dynasty.
Yeah. I think 3 and 4 allows you one mistake because anyone can lose one game of footy, as we saw in the 2018 prelim. But 3 and 4 is a fair summation. You have to draw the line somewhere. And as much as I'd love to say Geelong was a dynasty for being so good for so long, 08 is still... there's a reason why everyone in about the third quarter of the prelim on Saturday night, if you were not a Geelong fan, you thought the game was over. If you were a Geelong fan, you were certain it wasn't.
Max, you're the most worried football fan I've ever met.
It's not good. I mean, the good thing is I'm not scared of the grand final because it's just that the Cats have made it there. All I cared about. Like, if you lose the grand final, it's the worst. But, you know, you got there at least.
All right, let's stay with the Richmond half of this, fair or fast. Max, fair or fast. Not even Brendan Gale believed they would win three flags by 2020. Fair or fast.
Believed is probably fair. I mean, when you have an aspirational plan like they did for 75,000 members and three flags in 10 years, you're aspiring to that. That's your best case scenario. And they're a game away from getting there. And then
and they're at 100,000 members.
Yes. Well, I think it's hard to predict records being broken like that. So, yeah, no, I don't think he believed it was going to happen. And I don't think if you looked at Richmond after that last game of round of 2016, where they got thumped by Sydney, I think it was.
Yep.
I mean, if you've picked them to be the best team of the next 4 years, congratulations, you're the greatest mind footy has ever seen. And you're also a liar. So, no one saw this coming. And it's fantastic seeing that old footage from Footy Classified where Brendan Gale was bringing that up and bringing up that plan. And good on them for following through it. It's why they've been such a fantastic, successful club that people have tried to emulate.
I just like, we said this a lot on the podcast this year. I love clubs that go out and say what they want to do and unashamed in their boldness. And Ken Hinckley was like that this year. Now, they didn't succeed. They didn't win a flag. But he was like, we want to win the premiership. You know, what else are we doing? And it can be embarrassing when it fails badly. But I just I like the idea of actually putting it on the record.
It's St Kilda did the same thing and it didn't work for them. So it sometimes flies in your face.
Yep. Exactly. So the issue with the Saints, the road to 2018 or whatever it's called, was not in the wasn't actually the objective. It was actually the way they went about doing it. I think I had no issue with them doing it in the first place. But yeah, you're right. It can be embarrassing if you fail. Ben, fair or fast, Geelong now winning a flag this year will be a better achievement than beating Collingwood in 2011 for Chris Scott. Fair or fast?
Yes, fair. Like Richmond, considering the circumstances that Geelong has had to endure. I also think that, and I hate using this, but it's kind of factual that Chris Scott was handed a very, very, very good team in 2011. But it still required excellent coaching to ensure that that team was at its best for that 2011 season. And that team really peaked in that final series in 2011, had a fantastic final series. But this is Chris Scott's team really now, and along with Stephen Wells, they've developed this list. They've recruited shrewdly. They've drafted really, really well, and they've put together a list that is very, very different now to 2011. Not too many players still remaining from that 2011 premiership side, and they've got a game style that's very, very different. You know, under sort of Mark Thompson and the start of Chris Scott, it was very attacking, through the middle kind of game style. It's very, very different now to what we see in 2020. So I think it would be a bigger achievement considering what that the pain and the hurt that they've endured over the past couple of seasons, which Chris Fagan talked about in his press conference after Brisbane lost, add that all to, all those elements together, it'd be a bigger achievement to win this flag.
Hey, Max, do you think Chris Scott hates the notion that anyone could have coached that 2011 flag?
I'm sure he does, because it's taking away from what he did. And Ben phrased it completely correctly. It's not unfair to mention that he came to the helm of one of the great teams of the modern era. But yes, you also have to do a lot of work to get a team to win a premiership, no matter how talented they are. And just on the question on the fair or farce, keep in mind that this is a Geelong team that was finished on top of the ladder last year, then lost a top five finisher from the Brownlow in a trade that was only getting them draft picks back, and has still been one of the two best teams in the comp. Mm. So it's incredible that Geelong has stayed this good given they lost Tim Kelly.
Absolutely, and they might actually benefit from it given the draft picks they got.
Yes.
Last fair or farce of the week to you, Maximilian.
Mm-hmm.
Fair or farce. Geelong needs to change the way it plays to beat Richmond after a home and away season drubbing.
No, I don't think so. I think that's a farce, and I don't think they will, because teams at this point of time of year aren't going to change what they do. Geelong being the only team that really tries to negate the opponent's strength in games as much. Chris Scott's been so fantastic at that. So, no, I think Geelong had a bad night. They also didn't have their full best team in there. I think On the Couch showed the players who were playing in their forward half in the inside 50, and you had a lot of fringe players being in at that time, Brad Close, Tom Atkins, those sort of guys who are not going to be playing on grand final day. And Geelong is playing now at a ground that suits them better. The Gabba being a different shape ground to the expanses of the MCG, it's going to make it easier for them. And they also kick better there. So there are a lot of reasons why this will be a much different game to that home and away game. And Geelong can play its style. And if changes need to be made, you do that during the game, not necessarily going in, although you'd make a few tweaks based on the big things that went wrong.
That's the NFL Farce for Grand Final Week 2020, a proud segment. Still no sponsor, so if you want to get in touch, email ben.waterworth@news.com.au.
Oh, dearie me.
I'm looking forward to the flurry of emails that I'm going to get to sponsor Fair or Farce soon, Thomas. Before the mailbag, it would be remiss of us not to touch on the Brownlow, Maxi. And this is where you're sort of in your prime on Brownlow night.
It's all numbers. It's AFL tables. It's the best.
Navigating AFL tables is what you do best, and you were certainly doing that on Sunday night. The records that Lachie Neale did in this or achieved in this Brownlow medal win were quite extraordinary, it has to be said.
Yeah, on a per-game basis, it was the most dominant season in history. Polled 1.82 votes per game. If he'd played a full season and played at his rate of polling, he would have polled 40. And the record was Dusty with 36. Dusty had 11 best on grounds when he won the Brownlow. Neale had 10 in 17 games. It's utterly ridiculous. And look, there's an argument that the votes are now too concentrated in the Stars. You have things like Sam Walsh not outpolling Patrick Cripps, and things like midfielders who are big names, brand names, they get the attention and you sort of almost default to giving them votes. But you look at every award, and every award does that. Every award credits the midfielders. And the fact is, midfielders do get over-indexed in awards, but midfielders have the biggest impact on the game. If you touch the footy more, you can do more things and have more of an impact on the game. So
I agree.
It would be great if key defenders were really credited. And, you know, Nick Haynes polled some votes, and there were some other All-Australia defenders and forwards polled votes. Tom Hawkins probably deserved more votes than he got, but the reality is midfielders get all the attention because they have the biggest impact, no matter how good a forward or a defender can be in their limited chances.
Yeah, and I would add to that as well, is that when you hear coaches talk about, you know, defences and forward 50s as well, a lot of it depends on the pressure on the midfield. About a team's result on the field often depends on whether the midfield is on top at the coalface and at clearances, and how much defensive pressure they're putting in there. So from a coaching perspective, there is so much emphasis on the midfield now to correlating to wins and losses. And I think the oldest trick in the book with the Brownlow as well is which teammates will take votes off a potential favourite. And it has to be said, as good as Jared Lyons was this year, and now Dane Zorko was probably a little down compared to previous years. McCluggage was strong, but he's off a wing and isn't sort of under the umpire's eyes a lot. There was no one taking votes, really, off Lachie Neale throughout the season. When you look at someone like a Christian Petrarca. At the start of the season, it was Max Gawn had a really good start, was taking some votes off him. And then Clayton Oliver towards the middle and back end of the season was taking some votes off.
It's the perfect storm, isn't it, Benny and Maxi? Because you've got a situation where the game is played very rarely with a hard tag. You've got a situation where Brisbane has won enough games so that they should have vote getters. A situation where they don't have a lot of other gun players to take votes off him. And a situation where a player is at his absolute peak. And when they combine, it makes complete sense that he posted that he polled so many votes and per game more votes than anyone else in history.
Now, Tom, to turn our attention to the mailbag. Maxi's tweeted out the call for questions yesterday and given it some love today. The punters have come, as usual, thick and fast.
Yes, and thank you to everyone who tweeted their questions in. Let's start. Let's look at the preliminary finalists a little bit. Brisbane and Port did so well to get there. Joshua wants to know, what does Brisbane need to do to take the next step?
I think Chris Fagan's press conference after Saturday night's game is fascinating viewing. So I encourage you to watch that back. Not a lot, to be honest. I think they'll, I think Kingy put it really well as well in terms of this was put, in terms of being put on a platter to win a flag, it was as good as it's going to get this season for Brisbane, but they clearly weren't ready. So not ready just from a maturity, probably, perspective. I think they could probably boost that midfield a little bit more. That midfield really failed the test on Saturday night against a hungrier Geelong outfit. So maybe another midfielder there just to support Neil and Lyons and Zorko. Maybe even allow Zorko to play a little bit more across half four because we know how damaging he is. Joe Danaher, I think, will help. And I reckon Chris Fagan is the perfect coach to help Joe Danaher thrive. He revealed in his press conference as well that he's already spoken with Joe Danaher. I think that's a really good match. I think from a physical perspective, Danaher knows the physio at Brisbane really, really well. They've worked together in the past. So that will certainly bring Danaher some sense of comfort. That key forward will help. But I also think that the Lions really probably should try and bring in another tough, classy midfielder to help with some contested ball and give Neil some support.
Yep. Yeah, I agree with that. But I also think they need to have internal organic growth, as they like to say. And the players they've got need to get better and stronger and fitter. I don't know about you guys, but I reckon Danaher's going to be good for them if he's fit, obviously. But I just reckon that Hipwood and Danaher together could go either way because they're quite similar. And there's a moment on the weekend when Hipwood missed a shot at goal from about 35 metres out on his left boot. I thought, geez, that actually looks like Joe Danaher. You know, he kicks him from 55 on an angle but misses those ones. So I'm intrigued to see how those two work. But it's a high bar you set, isn't it? When you make a prelim and you want to improve the next year, you need to make a grand final to actually have that tangible improvement. And that's a very hard task when you're coming into a season.
Yeah, and I think the fact that, Chris Fagan said in his presser that they brought in Cam Ellis-Yolman to be the big body midfielder to counter Geelong. If you're relying in a prelim on Cam Ellis-Yolman, nothing against him, solid player, but he's not the guy who's going to swing a prelim.
He's not Selwood Metagola, Dangerfield.
Not quite. Type, is no, he? No. And so to answer the question from my perspective, what does Brisbane need to do? Nothing. Like, they don't need to do anything. They very much could have won the premiership this year, and they were in with a chance of winning that prelim. So sometimes these things just happen. Justin has a very important question, and maybe Tom, as the sportsman of the group, you can answer this.
Hey, Ben was an excellent short third man fieldsman.
I don't know what that will have impact.
That's actually correct.
Tom, why is it okay for players to oil up before a game? Surely introducing a foreign element is outside the spirit of the game.
Yes. Good question.
God, great question. You know my thoughts on the spirit of the game. I'm one that likes, the reason why we have rules is to,
you're setting the boundaries for where things can be broken.
Exactly. Thanks for speaking for, I couldn't say it better myself. So regulate against, certain actions. So this, your version of the spirit of the game is different to my version of the spirit of the game. I'm not sure whether oil actually makes you have an advantage. I mean, I presume it probably makes you harder to tackle. I've never worn oil. I've never played a game in a... that is a lie. I've never worn oil in a game of football. I've worn it on the beach and at schoolies and things like that, but I've never actually worn it playing footy, and nor have I ever tackled anyone with oil. I mean, I know that part of the reason football jumpers are designed the way they are is because they're harder to tackle. They're very silky. They're very very tight on the skin. And a lot of the time when players come in the rooms at halftime or after the game, they've got to have physios or trainers or teammates take the jumpers off them. That's how tight they are. So maybe there's a tactic, but it might just be a vain thing for players like Tom Hawkins to try. And if it's just vainness, well, play on. You know, people can do whatever they want.
It's a Tom big Hawkins. Talking point on social media, but particularly Patrick Dangerfield and Tom Hawkins. You know, a minute before the first bounce, Danger's getting the biceps and the triceps oiled up. It's a certainly a sticking point with well, fans on not. Social media. Yes, factually
that's
correct.
That's the point of the...
I mean, hey, Max.
Yeah. Well, yes?
It reminds me of groundskeeper Willie saying, oil me up, woman.
Okey dokey. I mean, Tom Hawkins looked like some 80s wrestlers with that much oil. He could have been Hulk Hogan, to be honest. But
yes. Anyway, or Rikishi, yeah.
Different look.
Different era. Anyway,
I mean, if Rikishi was one out in the goal square, you'd still stay away from him, just in case.
I'd back Rikishi, yeah.
Derek asks, what eventually stops a dynasty club like Brisbane, Hawthorn, Geelong, and potentially Richmond? What stops them? Is it age, departures, their game style no longer works, or a combination?
What about this? Just natural evolution. So players, when they're 28, are better than what they'll be when they're 38. So having to find new players to fill holes is a very difficult task. It's what makes the achievement of Hawthorn winning three in a row after also winning 2008 quite remarkable. It's like they won one probably before their time. They probably lost one they should have won in 2012. And then they won three in a row when they weren't always expected to win three in a row, especially with two of them without Buddy. So I think just natural evolution is the main thing. Players come and go. And as a result, when you don't have the cattle that you once did, it's very hard to hold on to it. I mean, I remember looking at Brisbane in 2003 and even throughout the season in 2004, and every time they lost, it would just be a huge shock. You know, just how can Brisbane lose? And yet, two or three years later, they'll outside the eight or just on the eight. So it can change pretty quickly.
Yep. It's naturally, and also being the top team, you are necessarily the target. That's why I think every premiership after the first is harder to win, because people are trying to stop you in particular. West Coast had their game style that worked so well and everyone works it out. People are trying to work out the Richmond game style and slowly getting there. It's what happens when you're at the top.
Yeah, that's a very good question.
And let's have one last one, sort of a preview of the trade period, of course. Everyone's favourite story during the trade period is our live blog. Ooh. Where you can ask any question, and I do mean any question you want, and I'll usually be telling you about my lunch or just responding to whatever Lax Morton has to say. But let's start with this question from Chaka Khan, who has a trade idea. Tom, can you evaluate how likely? Give me a percentage odds.
Oh, here we go.
This one's happening. So, Collingwood and Adelaide. So, Collingwood receives pick one and Riley O'Brien. Adelaide receives Brody Grundy and Collingwood's next two first-round picks.
Oh, God. I think unlikely. But given you're the trade blog expert, Max, maybe you can give me your thoughts.
I mean, my answer to every trade blog question is I'll probably a late second, early third round pick.
yeah. What's Tom Cutler worth? Second, early third.
Yeah, probably that. I actually would not do that trade if I was Adelaide. That doesn't make any sense to me if I'm Adelaide. You don't.
When you're in the middle of rebuild mode at the moment, you want all the young picks that you can get.
Yeah. Yeah,
even if it's a couple of years' time.
Yeah, and Riley O'Brien's going to be good for a while. So to actually answer that question, I suppose. That's it for the mailbag. Thank you, everyone who wrote in. And that's the final mailbag of the season, guys.
Yes. It's sad times, it has to be said. Before the tips and the cuffs, on Tuesday night, the 234th and final episode of Open Mic will air. And had the sort of privilege of working with a couple of former show producers, but all the producers that sort of helped Mike out over the years that have rotated through, and have come up with a list of 30 of most memorable episodes. Some episodes stiff not to be in there. I think Nikki Winmar and the Gilbert McAdam one a couple of years ago was really powerful viewing. But gents, if there's one episode that stands out or is most memorable, is there one that sticks in your mind?
One word, Jacko.
A toilet trained pubic hair, which I think was the quote, and I remember that because I, as part of my role at Fox Footy in 2016, was that episode maybe 2017?
Yeah.
I can't remember. For a number of weeks, I think Ben, you assigned me the role of writing a piece on Open Mic, and then they would go up at about lunchtime, and then that night the show would be on. And I'm just sitting at my desk watching this open mic episode that hadn't been aired yet, thinking this is going to absolutely explode. and it absolutely did. And then about a month later, I was at the Railway Hotel in Port Melbourne, and there was Mark Jacko Jackson hanging here. So I got a photo with him.
Quite incredible.
I reckon.
I've got the piece up here, Tom, and you start with, buckle up. Tuesday night's open mic will be the most absorbing 40 minutes of television you will watch all year.
Not wrong.
It was honestly incredible, wasn't it? And yeah. I felt for Mike, he copped it, but he responded really well. I mean, it's a shame for me that that's the most memorable one because it sort of, it doesn't really highlight anything aside from Mark Jacko Jackson's genuine craziness and nuttiness. But Ben, I read your article this morning, the top 30 episodes, I thought it was fantastic. And you could have probably included another 60 or 70 in there. Yeah. Just Mike's ability to empathise with the talent, to get the right answers at the right time, to do it in a timely manner, to hit the storylines and the sweet spots that make people continually come back and watch. I think it's been a fantastic show for so long. And I sent Mike Sheehan a text last week saying congratulations. He's been a doyen of the industry. And I think he is the doyen. He has to be, and tell me if I'm wrong here, he has to be the most decorated journalist since the national game started. So since the late 80s, early 90s, I can't see any AFL journalist having more notches on their belt than Mike Sheehan. He really has been great to get to know a little bit, and to watch his work on Foxwood, he's been awesome.
Yeah, him and Caro are certainly right up there. And you know, that episode I think came in at number 6 when Caroline Wilson and went on open mic and went to head to head. But yeah, Mike's ability to make the interview never about himself, unless it's kind of invited or it's almost ridiculous if he's not part of it, a la Mark Jackson or Caro. His ability to make it all about his guests is second to none and epitomises his humility. So congratulations, Mike, on a fantastic career at Fox Footy with Open Mic. It is clearly his show, and the final episode will air at 8:30 p.m. on Tuesday night, Eastern Daylight Savings time. Thank you, mate.
Do we need to hire another journalist named Michael to fill in the show now, or do we just have to change it to a name that doesn't make any sense? Open Tom doesn't work.
No, it doesn't work at all. I think Open Mike will retire and ride off into the sunset, and I don't think it would be right to have another open something.
That's fair enough.
Yeah. You know, it's maybe. It just wouldn't make sense. Like, can you imagine having Open Max? I mean, I'd watch it, but...
Oh, there'd be a lot of esports interviews that I don't think we'd be interested in.
WWE and esports interviews.
Oh, yes. Sheamus, he can come back from the
Sheamus studio. Sheamus, yes. The Hardy Brothers. Maybe you could do both of them at the same time.
William Regal.
Who's winning the grand final on Saturday, God. Tom?
And Norm, do you want a Norm Smith as well?
Yeah, give us a Norm Smith. It has to be said as well that, so there's five of us that work at the on the digital editorial side of things, and four of us are... have teams in the grand final this weekend. There's three Geelong supporters, and Matt Barmer is a Richmond supporter as well. And Matt's going to put together a Richmond fan nuffy piece later this week, which I'm looking forward to reading.
Am I the only one that doesn't go for either of these two
teams? No. So your tip carries weight.
Yeah, as it should.
No, Tom, don't worry. When Melbourne gets to the grand final, sorry.
We'll be pensioners. Yes, come on, don't do that. Oh God! No, I'm tipping Richmond, just because I don't want to tip against them. I tipped against them when Geelong played them in the home and away season, and that looked silly that night. I just think Richmond's best. I know you said Geelong's best is the best we've seen this year. I still think Richmond's best is the best we've seen this year. I think Richmond, at their absolute peak, just swarm and are so hard to defeat. And then, presuming that Richmond win, because that's my tip, I think Dusty will be Norm Smith, because when Richmond win, Dusty is often their best player.
Yeah. He'd become the first player, Maxie, to win 3 Norm Smith medals, which would be quite an unbelievable achievement.
It's a boring tip for me. But
well, it's right, probably.
Yeah, but let me just put this on the agenda. I want Geelong to win for Gaz. I really want Gaz to go out on top. If the all-time greats can finish with a premiership, it just puts a nice full stop on his career. So for Gaz, and also for Danger, but mostly for Gaz, I'd love the Cats to win.
Yeah, trying to put aside my fandom as much as possible and be objective. I think most neutral observers, are disappointed it's a Richmond-Geelong grand final. Like, they can admire it's the two best teams, but people wanted a rooting interest in Brisbane or Port. So we'll point that out. And I think Ablett has become a real favourite. Even Nicky Lawton, strong Hawks fan, has become a fan of Gary Ablett in recent weeks.
And really?
He's had a tough year, so you know he deserves the support. look, everything, all the numbers that I look at, I like looking at the stats. It worries me that they're tipping Geelong.
Right.
And there are a lot of reasons to back Geelong. Geelong has looked better this final series, I think, in both finals, both weeks the teams have won. Geelong has looked better. Richmond was not as good as the 5-goal margin suggested against St Kilda. And a 1-goal margin against Port was really very fair as well. But I cannot possibly tip Geelong to win a grand final because I could not deal with being wrong and heartbroken.
Oh, Max, that is pathetic.
So I'm not going to tip them. I'm going to tip Richmond. So I'm right or happy.
Oh, God, that is the classic hedge, and I've lost a bit of respect for you today.
The X factor for Geelong is Dangerfield. So when Richmond have thumped Geelong, certainly thumped last time they met, but then in the preliminary final, when they ran away with the game in the last quarter, Richmond didn't have a good look at Dangerfield as a permanent forward. So if the Cats can show the same dominance at the coalface that they've shown in the past couple of weeks, and I think Cam Guthrie's been huge in that, Joel Selwood's his output, Menegola as well on a wing and that work rate. Parfitt has, mentioned Parfitt as a potential trade bait in the possible Jeremy Cameron deal, Tom. Cats fans would hate to see Brandon Parfitt leave because his ability, his improvement in the last couple of years has been through the roof, and we're seeing a really fine player emerge at Geelong. If they can dominate, it allows Dangerfield to play forward and give and make some of those Richmond defenders a bit more accountable, make Vlostone or Grimes a bit more accountable. I think Asprey goes to Hawkins. I think that's probably the matchup that will happen. So it'll make one of those natural interceptors a bit more accountable. I'm tipping Geelong, and I'm tipping Patrick Dangerfield to win the Norm Smith medal.
Yeah, that's a very fair tip as well. Dangerfield, Norm Smith would be awesome. I agree with that. I don't know. Again, I can't remember whether I think this every year, but I think it's just all set up for an absolute humdinger because Richmond don't ever lose, don't lose by a lot very often, do they? So they're always sort of in the game, and Geelong are in really good form. So hopefully we can have a close one that's relatively high scoring and just really tight and comes down to the wire.
Yeah, I'm looking at their season. They had the Hawthorn and St Kilda games rounds 3 and 4, which were just weird. But since then, their losses have been that close game against the Giants, that fantastic game against Port in round 11, and then obviously the qualifying final. So either way, the worst case scenario is we get a repeat of the home and away game where Geelong just looks out of it and kicks 1 goal in 3 quarters.
Yeah.
I don't think that will happen again. That's my big hope.
Hopefully not. It's going to be awesome at the Gabba on Saturday night. 30,000
people.
It's
sold out. They put the tickets on general sale and sold out in half an hour. So well done, Queensland.
I know that because I've been texting my girlfriend who's up here, and we've been trying to get her a ticket. And she had her and her mum online trying to get a ticket, and she was 9,000th in the queue, and she missed out.
Oh.
So if anyone's got a spare ticket we can pay for, let us know. I think the chances are slim, but worth asking.
Well, you might see Bridget around the outskirts of the Gabba on Saturday, but please,
scalping.
No scalping.
Never.
Please, no scalping. For everyone out there, if you're based in Brisbane, good luck to the Cats. Good luck to the Tigers. Good luck to you, Tom, as you finish up your time in the Queensland Hub. You've been mighty up there. Just make sure that you convey Brownie and Gaz to the coaches a little bit better next time.
That's right. Can I say one more thing?
Of course.
The Tom Hawkins isn't training today.
Yep.
And I'm on the text with Geelong at the moment, and they say that he's having to quarantine, which has a new meaning in 2020 than what has it before, but really just isolating in his room so he doesn't get anyone else sick, but they expect him to be okay. And it just adds a little bit of intrigue to this week because I wouldn't want Tom Hawkins being sick or having a preparation that's not ideal. He was meant to do a press conference yesterday, and the club said that he had a family commitment that he had to get to. So Harry Taylor did the press conference. He's meant to do a press conference later in the week. I think it's Thursday, so we'll see if he turns up for that. But certainly any distraction is not ideal. It might just be a precaution, but they wouldn't want to go into this grand final without Tom Hawkins, that's for sure.
Tom, it's fine. Geelong in a final against Richmond, you just swing Lockie Henderson forward and it works out.
What about maybe Josh Jenkins could get a game? Or they'd bring in Radicalia.
Yeah, I would think so.
Anyway, well done, Ben. You've been fantastic.
So have you, Tom. So have you, Max. And keep looking back to foxfooty.com.au.